September 10th City Commission meeting. If you have not done so already, if you remember to silence your cell phones, we would appreciate it. We have with us today Mike Davis, who's a Winter Park Missionary Fellowship of Christian Athletes of Central Florida. That's a mouthful. Mike will lead us in our invocation. If you all would remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance, we'd appreciate it. Please, Mike, right to the podium.
Bow your heads. Father, we just thank you, Lord, for this opportunity, Lord, to come before you, Lord, to gather for a city we care about. Father, we just thank you, Lord, that in your word, Lord, you said that those people who are called by your name, if they humble themselves and pray, Lord, you will heal their land. Lord, you know that we have a land that needs healing. Lord, I pray godly wisdom for these people before me, these commissioners, this mayor. Lord, I thank you for their expertise and just continue to guide them to make the best decisions for these people. Father, we just thank you and we praise you and lift up your name. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mike, thank you. We appreciate you being here today. I know you're going to stick around for a bit, but thank you so much for leading us. Brandy, changes to the agenda?
No, sir.
Okay, we'll look for a motion to approve.
So move.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Mayor's report. Before I get started, two quick things. We have Cindy Strolla, who served on many boards over the years here in the city, just passed away this past Thursday. So if you would keep her family in your thoughts, that was just shared with me a few moments ago. Yeah. So Cindy was a real good friend of the city and worked hard on many boards. So please keep her family in your prayers. And secondly, Mr. Weldon, congratulations on the marriage of your daughter.
Two days ago
in New York City, and you got on a plane and came back to visit us last night. So we appreciate your appreciate that you pulled it off. Thank God for Fran, because I know Fran had everything to do with it. And I know you pulled together the band, and the band was a big hit from what I understand. So congratulations, Pete.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Now it's my honor to call. I'm going to ask Joey Cadle, school board member Joey Cadle, to step forward to the podium. Joey's got some special introductions.
Well, as you know, the City of Winter Park is such a great partner with the schools in Winter Park. And so we've had some leadership changes. If you haven't heard, Principal Smith got a promotion. So it's not like we moved him somewhere. He's now working in the office of our high school office. And so first I would like to have Principal Matt Arnold come up and join me. Some of you may remember Principal Arnold. He was at the high school when my youngest was at the high school. So, Commissioner Cooper, you may remember Principal Arnold too. Next, we had a change in leadership at the ninth grade center. And if Dr. Paul Wilhite will come up and join me. He's probably a familiar face. He has helped me at graduations for years. He's been on the main campus, and now he is the principal in charge of the ninth grade center. Also, I want to put a plug into our facilities people, and actually Dr. Wilhite's not going to want to hear this, but if you've noticed, I did get Pennsylvania Avenue landscaped, and I've told Dr. Wilhite, I said, it's your job to make sure it stays looking nice because I drive by it all the time. But we had the opportunity to choose three schools in our district, and the ninth grade center was number one on my list to please clean up Pennsylvania. So I hope you're enjoying the new landscape. Next, we have a new principal at Brookshire. So if Jason Fritz would come up and join us. Ms. Mulcrone took a job over in Brevard County. And so, Mr. Fritz, if I get this right, you came to us from Fern Creek and then Princeton. Yes. And then we have a new principal at Lakemont. As you know, Dr. Cunningham lost her valiant fight with cancer last year. And so Carl Fox is our new principal at Lakemont, and there's all kinds of new energy at Lakemont. And I just wanted you all to see the faces and know who they are. And last but not least, you all know I'm retiring, and there was a school board race in August, and Angie Gallo, if you'll please come join us. Ms. Gallo will be the new school board member for District 1 starting on November 20th. So congratulations, Ms. Gallo. And is Chief Deal in here?
He is not.
Okay. I want to say a huge thank you, and if you all will please share my thanks.
He's not here. It doesn't count, by the way. Joey.
This is thanks to you guys, too, so you want to take it?
Sure. Absolutely. We'll take those.
Okay, because as soon as the new law passed that said we had to have an SRO on every campus, there was no dickering, there was no fighting. The city of Winter Park and Chief Deal stepped up to the plate and said, I'm putting one at Brookshire and I'm putting one at Lakemont. We already had coverage at the middle school, at the ninth grade center and at the high school.
That's right.
And I just want to thank you for stepping up to the plate, doing what's right for our children. And it's a pleasure to represent all of you because you care about our children. You do what's right for the children from Winter Park. And I also asked the principal of Glenridge to be here. Some of you may remember Dr. Christopher Camacho. He was there when we first opened it up. And he left us and took some leadership, and he's now back. Oh, Chief Deal, you just missed it. I guess I'll have to rewind it. But Dr. Camacho is at the IB School Leaders Conference, and he couldn't be here today, but he is the new principal at Glenridge. So I'm very excited to be with all these professionals and the opportunity to introduce them to you. And Chief Deal, I can't see you around the screen, but I just gave the commission a thanks, and I want to give you a thanks. You stepped up to the plate as soon as the new school safety laws were passed. You put an SRO at both Lakemont and Brookshire. We didn't have to differ with you. We didn't have to beg. You did what was right. And I really appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much for doing this right.
Thank you. Joey, just a quick thank you to you, and welcome to the principals. Welcome to Angie. But you have served tirelessly for many years. On
16
the
years.
16. I wasn't going to say that. Representing.
I'm old.
I thought it was a compliment.
Representing not just Winter Park, but other areas within the county. So thank you very much for the time and dedication that you've spent, kind of taking care of our children and the organization. We have a much better relationship with Orange County Public Schools, and you're a big part of that. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, and I have no doubt it will continue under Ms. Gallo's leadership.
As well, so thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome,
all.
Welcome everybody. Okay, I'm gonna turn this over to the city manager, Randy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You have on your agenda today the confirmation of a planning and community development director. I present to you Mr. Bront Stevenson. We had applications from all over the country and all over Florida as well, but found Mr. Stevenson out of Owosso, Oklahoma, and very impressive gentleman. He will be starting upon your confirmation. He'll be starting on October the 4th. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions, and I request that you confirm Mr. Stevenson.
Question for the city manager.
So everything will be done October 5th. Is that the way I understand it?
Yes.
So do we just move it?
Yes, yeah.
We do need a motion for it.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Okay. Any other questions for the city manager on this issue specifically? If not, we can go back and touch others after this. Mm-hmm. Okay, we will just have a vote. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Please
thank
send
you.
The 5-0. Welcome, Randy. Anything else, Randy?
No, sir. I'd be
okay,
glad to answer any questions.
Just want to thank Randy. That's always a difficult task to choose a person in that important role.
Thank you.
And we appreciate it.
I thought you were saying it was a difficult task to thank Randy.
No, that's
oh, that's too.
That's
great. Randy, thank you so much. I know it was an exhaustive process, so thank you very much for the time spent on it. Mr. City Attorney, Kurt.
Mayor, Commissioners, just one item with respect to the buoys that we've been dealing with. Been working pretty closely with Troy and his staff. We've also coordinated with Ken Wright quite a bit. Actually, Troy and I had another meeting this morning with Ken, and we've laid out the following plan. I'm not going to give you all the details because it probably doesn't make sense to give you all of it, but the big picture would be as follows. All the markers that can be reestablished as regulatory markers in the lakes will be shown on a map, and there's quite a number of them. And under the statute, there are specific areas on the lakes that are already specified where we can put them, key points, so we can identify all of those. In addition to those regulatory markers, we can identify places on the lakes where markers can go that are hazardous conditions, which is a little higher standard, takes a little more evidence to establish. In both of those cases, it requires the city to adopt an ordinance to approve those markers, those regulatory markers, which ultimately, as to the hazardous markers, they have to be presented to the FWC Commission for approval of our ordinance and also approval issuance of a permit. Ken Wright knows the executive director well. He actually was on the commission when he was hired. He thinks that's a very good way to go. Before the commission would consider those for adoption, he suggests that we bring down Major Lowe, who is the enforcement and regulatory person for the FWC, have a lake tour, have him show him the map with the regulatory markers on that map where they would go, get his approval, blessing, whatever his comments would be. We then, of course, the commission's going to have to look at the map, make sure we're happy. We'll bring a proposed ordinance, not a final ordinance, but proposed ordinance with the maps to the commission for the commission to review and approve. Once we get that draft ordinance and the map in order, we'll take it to the FWC for their blessing. They bless it, we get the ordinances adopted, the permits issued. There will still be gaps along the lake boundaries where the regulatory markers are not, they don't fit the statutory mechanism, either under the hazardous condition necessarily or the prefixed set distances that are spelled out by statute. In those situations, we would come back at a second phase, which does not require any permitting, but separate markers that we would bring to the commission for their consideration.
You can't do that now?
We can.
But so why not?
Well,
you're not living it, and I can tell you it is, and you're living it too. Right. It is just a matter of time till somebody is hurt seriously out there.
Well, if we can show that we've got dangerous areas, that fits within the first category.
But can we do the second thing you just said now without going through all that rigmarole?
Yes, but those markers are only informational markers. You cannot, they don't fit in the, they don't require to be permitted, but you can't have a no-wake idle zone marker like that unless you go through the ordinance process.
Can you say you're getting too close on that and that's informational? I mean, I'm not being silly no, about this.
Right.
I'm being very serious about this because there, I don't.
It's like a beware of docks or something.
Right.
Well, yeah, couldn't you do that?
Right. Warning signs, depth things, things of that nature, swimming areas, a paddleboard, a lot of things you can say, and we can put the buoys up. But they would just be informational markers. They will not be.
But the physical presence of the buoy, Kurt, is all that's really needed.
That's all we need.
So let me ask, Kurt, if you don't mind this.
Sure.
So we'll have the restriction buoys out there. As far as informational buoys, will they only be allowed to be put up by the city? So if Ms. Sprinkle has she'd like to put up an informational buoy out there, does she have to come to the city to get it? Or can she just drop one in the water that says. No, I'm serious, because you're going to have people. I promise you, you're going to have people who live in the lake.
It's a city. They can be put in by the city, not an individual or some other entity. The statute authorizes counties and cities for informational buoys markers to be established. The regulatory markers are also items that we can be put in. But that's where you get the no-wake idle zones.
So let me ask you a second.
And actually, non-boating zones at all you can establish.
So the second part of that would be, do we have a process, and Randy, do we have a process that's in place? Well, not only that, but do we have a process that would be in place for someone who lives on the lake and believe that they need an informational buoy in front of their property? Is there something that someone can come and request?
This is not about somebody who lives on the lake, Rand.
No, Commissioner, I understand. I'm trying. I'm trying to go through the process of how if there are some that we miss. Whether,
okay.
I'm not trying to
stop that.
Yeah, Sarah, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this is just for people who live on the lake. I'm trying to figure out if someone comes forward and says, this is an area that I think there needs to be an informational buoy on.
Sure.
Can that be?
Absolutely, because the statute does not even require a permit for that. No blessing from the FWC or permit is required for those informational buoys.
So the city has jurisdiction?
Yeah, authority under the statute, so you've got a right to do that.
Do they have to? Do they have?
Commissioner Cooper.
That's a Troy. I don't know if we've got the buoys or not.
Right. So the question before we finish this conversation is, how do you apply to have one of those installed? Is there a fee? Because the problem is, I happen to be in that alcove near the Venetian Canal, and I used to have one boat with a teenager hauling a tube with 3-4-year-olds on it. This weekend, I had 3 boats.
So, Commissioner, can I stop you? I think the question is, let's take a look at the map first. You'll present us with a map, and we'll all get to
correct.
So you can look at it from areas that particularly you're aware of and concerned about.
But, Steve, what I'm saying is the schedule for when we see that map.
When is that map coming?
We actually have a draft of the map that we can present.
Would you forward that to the commission? Is that appropriate? Right.
So then what?
I'm sorry?
Is that appropriate for you right now?
Why can't we just direct them to put the warning signs out now where they see appropriate? What am I missing here?
Informational signs.
So
The informational signs.
Put them out now.
Similar to the ones that used to be there that were 100 feet offshore.
So here's why. Because I don't think we want them going out once to drop informational buoys and out next week when they get another request and out again another request. Why don't we try to take a look at it and do it a little bit more holistically and say,
why do we have to have it by request? The city can determine this. The city can determine
that's
this.
That's my point.
So
the city,
what
if the city does it and you come forward and say, how come I didn't get a buoy? Now somebody, you got to go request one.
Well,
my point
I
is
believe
we
it's
should,
time
we
sensitive
it
and it's
again.
A matter of public health and safety, and I believe it's time sensitive.
So certainly the informational buoys can go out without a permit. The other ones, of course. So the urgency is what I'm hearing from the commission is get something out of the lake now. Mm-hmm. Now, from a practical and a budgetary standpoint, that's a call that Troy and Randy would have to make because I don't know what they've got.
Guys, that's kind of my point. We don't know how much this costs. We don't know what the manpower is. Why not take a look at the maps and say, yes, everything's included on here that we would do, or you missed a certain couple areas.
Yeah.
Listen, if I'm in the majority here, that's fine. Then somebody just needs to provide direction and get 2 other nods for it. But I think it would make a lot more sense that we all look at the maps first before we make any decisions and we start going off half-cocked and dropping buoys and not dropping buoys.
Yeah, I'm assuming we have the buoys that we took up and we would simply put them back with the yellow sign stuck on it that says beware of docks.
We pulled up
right?
No wake buoys. This is different. These are the informational buoys.
Well, they don't have to say
wake. Right. So
it's a second degree misdemeanor
for.
But they have to meet a certain height.
Yeah.
In
all right.
For the new buoys, the shape, size, function of the new buoys is larger. It's probably twice as tall as the old ones.
36.
Correct. It's 36
inches
above
the water.
Is that for a
regular? Hold on, folks. I'm sorry. This is getting a little bit out of hand. Yeah. Troy, tell us what this takes, please.
So that's the buoy that we can use. There's a specified size and performance of that buoy.
Is that a maximum size or a required size?
That's a required size.
So some owners.
Right. Troy, are they orange or are they white like your old?
They're white with an orange band.
So, folks, we have direction. If you'd like to give direction, I've already made my feelings on this.
I'd like to get the details before we go approve the installation of any of these. I think we're all in agreement that it's no problem with any of us putting them in, but let's understand what they look like, what the size of them are, what the color of them are, what we can say on them, where they might likely go, and then we can move forward, I think.
But it has to be
very
expeditious.
I don't disagree with that, except if they're just informational buoys, do they have to meet the legal size? If they're informational.
Yes, I just asked that question.
Well, they're specified. I think actually the sizes under the current regulations for both regulatory and informational markers are the same.
Troy just confirmed
what's
that.
Said on those markers.
Right.
Okay. Now, so I don't know what the city has in its possession or not. I haven't seen the actual buoys, but the difference in the physical makeup of the buoys is, as
well,
I understand, to be the same.
Steve?
Sure.
Why don't we ask the city manager to have staff send us
the details of all this stuff. The drafts of the map, the specifications of the buoys and the sign sizes and the lettering sizes and the font requirements
and
all that stuff.
And the messaging on the buoys.
And the locations and those would be
the map.
Well, the map would be there. As soon as they can practically do that.
I would support that, Pete. Yeah. If we have a third, we can get that moving forward.
I would put a time frame to it.
Yeah, expeditiously. I mean, we got to talk about by our next meeting.
This week?
I'd like to have a decision.
Randy, if you guys can pull this together this week so we'll have an opportunity to revisit this next meeting with direction.
Sure.
Okay.
And I certainly want to get these things in, but
I understand. I understand.
Can
but
I ask a question about
please.
It? Okay, so if we get the informational buoys back, the informational buoys serve the same role that the previous buoys served, which was to notify people they were getting too close to shore or too close. I mean, they may serve some of that same purpose. Do we still need the regulatory buoys?
You don't have the enforcement rights. I mean, information, you're within 100 feet of the shoreline, or you're 3 feet deep here, or look out for the swimmers or something like that. So I think you're going to run into a regulatory issue.
So you still need it?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
thank
you.
That's
all
I
need.
That way you have some enforcement authority.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you for doing this, because I get this every single day. Somebody calls me and tells me about the boat. So I very much appreciate you doing this in a very quick way. So thank you all.
Any other questions for the city attorney? I'm sorry, Kurt, is that all you have?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Not that wasn't enough. Okay, let's move on then. We have the Historical Association annual presentation. Susan.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Nice to see you, Mayor Leary and commissioners. I'm Susan Schofield, Executive Director of the Winter Park History Museum. I'd like to thank you for your generous support this past year and share with you an overview of our accomplishments. I think you'll see that your investment has been managed well for the benefit of all of our citizens, as well as those who visit the museum from around the world. Our role at the Winter Park History Museum is to be the custodian of the city's archives and to present our city's history with engaging exhibitions. Our numbers indicate that we have been successful. To date, we've had 23,351 visitors during the city's fiscal year. We are meeting or exceeding the benchmarks set in last year's contract with the city. We have wonderful volunteer docents who have contributed over 1,300 hours of their time. This is an article from the Winter Park Maitland Observer about our youngest docent, Aziza Galley, the daughter of our board secretary, Alicia Nicole. As you can see, our guests represent visitors from 120 Florida towns and cities, 44 states, and 30 countries, including Argentina, Egypt, Germany, and the UAE. This information was taken directly from our guest sign-in logs and museum surveys. We also capture demographic data based on our guest surveys. Our speaker events were well attended this year and included Ed Gefeller, who showed his documentary about the Langford Resort Hotel and held a question and answer, and Jack Lane, who presented reflections on the history of Rollins College and Winter Park. These events are an excellent way for us to collaborate with other local organizations and create a dialogue with our community about the history, culture, and legacy of our town. In February, we celebrated our fourth annual Be My Neighbor Day in Central Park in collaboration with our local PBS station WUCF-TV and the City of Winter Park as the inaugural weekend of the Winter Park Weekend of the Arts. By the way, a shout out to your communications department, Clarissa and Craig. Amazing, amazing job with that. Over 5,000 children and family members joined us for our fourth year of Family Fun in the Park. WUCF-TV ran a 20-second promotional spot which played in seven counties within Central Florida with the logo for the Weekend of the Arts. Great thanks to the Winter Park Police Department and Fire Department. They were a huge hit at the event. We are scheduled for our fifth annual Be My Neighbor Day with WUCF-TV on Saturday, February 16th. 2019. This event will again be a part of the City of Winter Park's Weekend of the Arts. Through the year, we have collaborated with a number of local organizations, including All Saints School, City of Winter Park, Crealde School of Art, Hannibal Square Heritage Center, Pelagic Museum and Sculpture Gardens, Rollins College, Winter Park Chamber of Commerce, Winter Park Magazine, Winter Park Public Library, and the Winter Park Art Festival. We have also welcomed groups from a number of local schools and organizations, including the Boys and Girls Club of Orlando and the Winter Park Chamber of Commerce Youth Leadership Group. We have continued our hands-on history program, which brings various items from our archives to share with younger audiences.
Hard to believe that's from an archive.
And on June 7th, 2018, we held our grand opening party for our newest exhibition, Wish You Were Here, The Hotels and Motels of Winter Park. The party was attended by over 400 people. The Winter Park History Museum continues to create engaging and interactive experiences for people of all ages. Our Penelope, Princess of the Peacocks show has continued to grow. This year, our goal was to have 1,500 caregivers and children attend throughout the year. We are on track for the city's fiscal end of September for 3,500 attendees. We are grateful to the city for allowing us to use the farmers market space for the Penelope Show every Monday morning. The Penelope Show has become an integral part of what we do at the museum. It provides interactive and educational programming for young children and introduces them to history. This is a free 25-minute show held every Monday morning at 10 a.m. In fact, I believe Penelope may be here with a few of her friends.
Wow.
Oh, hello. Peacock feathers so high, blue and green, and toward us sunlight. Oh, peacock, peacock, wherever you are, in Winter Park, you're never too far.
I'd like to thank the Winter Park History Museum Board of Directors and our President Patty Shaney for their leadership and commitment this past year, and our great thanks to Mayor Leary and the City Commissioners for your past support and consideration of your continued support in 2019. So let me know if you have any questions.
Any questions? Ms. Schofield.
I am curious about the countries people visited from. If you looked at the group, who was the largest group?
You know, I don't know.
It's okay.
Just we have that on
the
slide.
Tell me something. I'm just kind of curious. Who we're getting the most visitors
Argentina
from.
A lot. Brazil a lot. I don't have the numbers at my, you know. And England, of course.
Thank you.
I'd love to have your PowerPoint presentation with some of those details so I can.
Oh, sure. You know, yes, you can send that over. Sure.
Thank
absolutely.
You. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Susan.
Thanks, you guys.
Appreciate it. Okay, folks, we'll take the citizen comments closer to 5 o'clock. Consent agenda. What say you, folks?
I need to recuse on 9B2, Mr. Mayor.
9B2? Okay.
I'll move the rest.
Okay.
I'll move all of it, and he just recuses himself, right?
Yes.
I'll second that.
Okay. Let's open up the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission on item 9A, B1, B3? Now is your time. Seeing none, we'll close the floor to the public comment. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Cindy, please have that read as 4-0. Now we'll open up the floor. We actually need a motion on... No, Commissioner Sprinkle, I will take yours and Mr. Weldon's motion for 9B2 as well.
Okay.
So we'll open up the floor to the public comment. Anybody should address the commission on 9 B2. We'll close the floor to public comment. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. I'm sorry, that was 4-0. The first one was 5-0.
It's 5-0, yes.
I apologize. Okay, discussion of comp plan, Mr. Briggs. So also, let me just, the reason this is before us, this is something that I was just interested in, and I appreciate your humoring me with this when I cannot remember the applicant's name. Mrs. Black.
They've done 1800 Boynton Lane there on the North Shore of Lake Laramie.
Right.
Who's here asking to split that 3-acre estate into three different 1-acre properties.
Right.
Because in that case, there was a prohibit of lakefront estates.
Right. There are certain areas within the city of Winter Park that are prohibited from even asking, if you will, for a lot split. They'd have to go through a complete comp plan announcement, which required citywide notice, which I think was about $6,000. Am I right? Do I remember that number correctly?
Yes.
So it seemed pretty prejudicial that 29,000. In a city of 29,000 people, only a few areas within the city where people have to go through that expense, which seems, again, extremely prejudicial. So that's where this whole thing generated. I think there. Then you looked at all the other prohibits within the comp plan, and that's what this is about, right?
That's right. Okay. We put together the list, and any time we say prohibit, there's 27 on the list.
Great.
But to your point, there are three instances where, if you want to do lot splits, subdivisions. In those circumstances, you're prohibited from asking for variances. That's the lakefront estates and two neighborhoods, Orwin Manor and a North Park neighborhood. They would have to follow what Ms. Black had to do, which was go through citywide notice. Because it's 17,000 households, it's $600 to pay for that notice application fee versus the $500 normally for the rest.
6,000, not 600.
6,000, because 6, we got 17,000.
No, I know you said 600.
I'm sorry.
That's 6, okay. 000. And Jeffrey, can you go backwards and recall why these areas were singled out?
Yeah, they're not in there by accident. There's always a story behind everything, and it goes back to the commission in 2009. We had a very acrimonious split of the Galloway estate there on Via Lugano, and while we reached an amiable compromise of, again, 1-acre estate lots, it just left a negative taste in the commission's mouth at that time about how these lakefront lot splits were viewed. They're very controversial, probably the most controversial thing I've seen in my career, and so they just didn't want to go through it in that instance, and thought the prohibit was warranted. In the other two instances, North Park, we had again had some acrimonious lot splits there on Kenwood, Oaks, Pansy, whole neighborhood turning out. And so, you know, those neighbors at the time asked the city commission to not allow any variances. And so the commission in 2009 did that, and the same kind of story in Orwin Manor. We had a number of requests. The Warren Manor Association neighbors turned out. You know, and the commission asked folks, when we do comp plan, what do you want us to do? And so, again, Orwin Manor Association had asked for that, and that's why they're in there.
Okay.
Thank you. Can I ask a question?
Sure, please.
Before 2009, all the lots that were 50-foot lots in Winter Park, they could still be built on, correct?
No.
Okay, so when did that change? When did I own two 50-foot lots that I can't build on. So
you can't split.
I can't. No, they were split already. They're split. There were two 50-foot lots. That's how they were.
They were joining,
right. So when did that change, and how did people know that they can no longer build two houses there?
So going way back.
What's way back?
Way back 30s, 40s, 50s. I mean, you could, any lot that was out there, you could build on.
Right.
But in the 1960s, we started developing Kenilworth Shores and other neighborhoods that were 75, 100 feet wide. In the early 60s is when the city came up with R1A, needing 75 feet for any new lots, or R1AA, 100 feet for any new lots. But still at that time, if you had
existing,
two 50s
you
together,
were grandfathered in, so to speak.
Yeah.
Right.
And then in the latter part of the 1970s is when we really followed what Orange County did, which was if you had them in the same ownership and you had a conforming property, so you had two lots, two 50-footers, you had 100 feet.
I'm not sure I understand.
Zoning said you needed 100 feet, then you couldn't split them and become non-conforming.
So that was the late 1970s?
Yes.
Okay.
But if you're, if I'm sorry, Commissioner, if you are in Ms. Sprinkle's case, she is still allowed to apply for a variance to split this property
because it's not one of these two areas.
Without going through a citywide public notice that costs $6,000 because she's not in these two areas that are set aside in the complex.
Or three areas.
How
given
much
the
public
fronts.
Notice is required if not in these two areas?
It's 500 feet radius to all owners, and then the poster in the front yard for the dog walkers to see.
$500 versus $6,000. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay.
Go ahead. Do you have more to add?
No.
Okay. So, folks, my issue again is just these certain areas. I think is prejudicial. So, I would ask that we consider removing the prohibit language from lakefront, from, I think it's in 4, 6, 23, and 24. Now, that doesn't grant people the right to do it. It simply removes the comp plan test and requiring a very small number of residents in the city to pay $6,000 where nobody else in the city has to go through that that expense.
I think we might have a little bit of a misunderstanding. Jeff, this clause, number 6, doesn't apply to just some limited areas. That applies to the entire city.
It applies
in any residential estate property.
Sorry, I meant 4. Did I say 6 as well? I'm saying 4, 23, and 24. Take out 6, sorry. So 4 is the lakefront. And again, this doesn't mean automatically these will be granted. It just means that the applicant does not have to go through citywide public notice at the expense of $6,000.
So what are we doing today? Are we moving that?
I'm bringing that up. I will make that motion.
Okay.
You would need to come back in the form of an ordinance.
Okay.
Right. To direct staff. I'm sorry. I would ask staff to, if we have three nods, to ask staff to remove that and bring it back as an ordinance.
But if I look at the clauses that you're referencing, Mayor, number 23, you said 23?
4, 23, and 20. Did I get that right, Jeff? 23 and 24?
This is not lakefront property. This is North Park Avenue lots.
That's correct.
There's two neighborhoods, North Park and Orwin Manor, and then the lakefront estates are the three categories. It now would have to spend $6,000 citywide notice to ask for a variance for a lot split. They could lot split if they met the code.
So the concern is actually the cost.
The concern is the differential in the cost between 6,000 and the normal 500.
Right. The city would still have the ability to deny the request. We're just not charging our residents $6,000 to ask the question.
And we no longer have legal authority to deny the request. This gives us legal authority because it is prohibited, which
no,
is a...
That's not changing because, again, we're talking about requests that need variances. So you always have the legal authority to deny any request with a variance.
This one says variances or approval of development in violation are prohibited.
You're on number 3?
Right. Is that one?
I'm not. No. Okay. But I'm talking 423... Number 4.
Got it.
Where it just says lakefront.
That's waterfront development.
That's waterfront.
Right.
So anybody with
Can't
a massive with lot like Mrs. Black would have the ability to come before the commission and ask to have it split without going through a comprehensive plan process at the expense of $6,000.
So but isn't that to the minimum of a 1 acre lot, though, right? Isn't that what we're
that's
saying?
That's still old.
That's still there.
That's still
no,
old.
I'm saying they split their lot down to 3 1-acre lots. So
right.
The one thing they were doing was saying, well, we're not going below the acre lot size.
Exactly.
So if you want to change 4, I think you change it to say and add that these lots may not be split to less than 1 acre. Because we don't want them people
that's
splitting half-acre lots into 2 lake lots.
Jeff, correct me if I'm
right?
wrong with this. The size of the lots is already in another...
The size would revert to what the zoning is, either R1 AAA or R1 AA. And
but
so
I think that's in 6.
If if the interest was in making sure on the lakefront that you never saw anything less than an acre, then Commissioner Seidel's suggestion would be appropriate.
Say that again, Jeff.
So in the absence of any other guidance, it reverts to what's the property zoned. Is it zoned R1 AAA? Or is it zoned R1 AA? You meet that lot and width requirements.
But you don't need that in there because that's covered elsewhere.
But in Commissioner Seidel's case, he's saying, I feel though the standard should still be an acre. So
for lakefront.
For lakefront.
But that's in another area of the code.
It would need to be part of your.
If you're going to take it out of four, right, and not make it prohibit, then you've got to come back because it doesn't say in six, it just says lots of an acre. So you could take a 1 acre lake lot and split it into 2 half-acre lots. And
So Ms. Black.
So we need to specifically say they have to at least be an acre in size when you split them. Because that's what we did for these folk who said, okay, well, each of your lots is an acre, so we're okay with that.
And we said the only reason we were okay with it because it was isolated to Lake Killarney, and it was not Lake Maitland, our large estate properties, nor was it Interlochen, our large estate properties. And I think part of the calling card for the city of Winter Park is that we try to be a true city. We try to allow places where people who feel the need to have 3-acre estates on the lot, on the lakes, have that opportunity, and people who feel the need to live in condominiums on New England Avenue have that opportunity. So this was put in place because Winter Park had always said, we don't want to be cookie cutter. We don't want everything here to look the same. And so by having diversity in the size of our lakefront lots, that does drive diversity in our architecture and in our community. I appreciate your desire to allow the fee not to be charged, and I'm perfectly comfortable saying in here that the City Commission has the authority to waive the fee. I have no problem with that.
Well, but we'd still have to do the public notice.
Waiving the fee doesn't help because then the city has to pay the $6,000 because that's the real cost of the notice.
And sometimes you may decide that's...
I'm not interested in that.
It's still prejudicial. It's telling a certain section of the city, whether by geography or if you have lakefront, that if you want to split your lot, it's going to cost you $6,000 to even ask the question if you're allowed to do it.
Right.
And then the City Commission can judge whichever way. All I'm saying is, if we take out the prohibit within the comp, if we take that section out of the comp plan, they can still ask. They just don't have to go through the process, just like their other
citizens. Mr. Mayor, on these three items, I just think they're important enough to have the citywide notice. And the $6,000, when you look at the lot splits and the prices of the lots and the what they resale for, it's really not that much. It's probably going to be less than the attorney's fees.
I don't think you want to get into what's important.
Yeah.
Well,
these are in here because they were important to people when they put them in. And I don't want to sit here and override the decisions that these people made.
Right. Or when Manor will fill this.
That's what you're doing in that seat. That seat is there to
right. Well, I'm saying I'm okay with the historic decision to put that in there, and then they'll pay $6,000.
And so with people who are living in those neighborhoods now who had this put on top of them, probably most of them did not even know that this was put on top of them. You're comfortable looking at that small percentage of Winter Park and say, if you want to split your lot, even if your neighbor down the road who doesn't live in your neighborhood doesn't have this penalty on top of them of $6,000, you're comfortable.
I would be happy for those people to come petition the commission when they go to do it.
Okay.
I don't want to make it available to developers to just come in and say, look, I don't even have to pay anymore. You guys can apply. It's not a big deal. I don't have to pay for it. You have to pay for it. Let's go split all these lots.
Right.
Okay.
Right. That's what
I'm fine with waiving fees for homesteaded property owners when we have something of this magnitude. A fee is not my issue. It's maintaining the character of our community that's my issue.
Okay, good. Then you shouldn't worry. Then you agree with me.
No, I don't agree with you at all. Okay. In fact, I really disagree with you because I think it's important.
Vice Mayor Will.
I'm not prepared to move forward with any changes today,
okay.
But I would like more information. For example, on number four, taken into consideration along with number six, number four only applies to lots that are less than an acre by definition, right? because number six says, shall prohibit any subdivisions or lot splits of estate lots 1 acre or greater. So that's already in there. So number four relates only to lots that are less than an acre.
On the lake.
On the lake. So I'd like to know how many lots on the lakes meet the zoning allowance to split without coming through a process. Does that make sense? So in other words, how many lots are at stake here?
Okay.
I'd like the same information on the two areas.
23 and 24?
On North Park and in...
Orwin Manor. And those two are not on the lake. They're just all lots.
Understood.
Mm-hmm. Hold on.
Vice Mayor Wilden has a floor step.
All right. So that kind of information would help inform me better as to whether or not a judgment should be made here or not, because it is a judgment in the end. If you take out the prohibited language, the only effective change, and it is a meaningful change, but the only effective change is to reduce the fee to apply from $6,000 to $5,000. To $500 for the required notice. In all cases, notice would be required.
It's just the different scope of the notice, significantly.
And then you're treating everybody equally in the
right.
city.
I understand your logic, Mr. Mayor. I just want to, before I can, draw any conclusions, I'd like to see the scope of impact of what would happen if we change these policies. Where are the lots? How many of them are there? Because this...
Well, can I just interrupt, Peter? Effectively, nothing changes. It's not like we're granting these lot splits.
I understand.
They still have to come before the commission like they do now. They just don't have to pay $6,000 to ask the question.
And they don't have citywide notice. So if we have a large 3-acre estate lot on Interlochen or someplace else in the city, then...
Well, no, just these two areas.
Well, you said Orwin Manor, Park North, and then the general clause, which was number four, would be any place on waterfront in the city.
Okay, so lakefront.
Yeah.
Sure.
You may not admit to do that. And I guess my point is, I think that level of notice is important because it does create the character of our community. I really am indifferent relative to the fee, so I'm perfectly comfortable allowing people who cannot afford to pay that fee, if they are homesteaded property owners, to come in and ask for that exception.
So then you're making an additional exception. So then why don't we just impose that fee on everybody in the city?
Yeah.
If they choose to.
Every lot split
instead of these, just instead of these two areas. If you feel comfortable that you want to hold that,
I'm not uncomfortable in areas where the character of the community really does rest within the existing compatibility and the way these communities are structured. I am not uncomfortable having this level of notice, because for me it's not about the money.
Where else would you recommend that we apply the?
May I say something?
Sure. Commissioner Sprinkle.
Okay, I'm having a really hard time with this because this is obviously something that happened that was done for certain people. That's what this is. This isn't about did the city decide this place should have this and this place here. That's not here at all. Because if it were here and that was going on, there would have been a lot more people that wanted to maybe either have that done. This is not something that I can even realize that we did in this community, because what we said is, if you want to be part of this protected place, come let us put this in. And that's just not right. I'm really having a hard time with this. I can't believe they did this. But I will say that in my world, the whole community of Winter Park needs to be protected, not by asking them to pay this kind of money. But the idea that we think it's okay that we picked out two areas and those two areas have something nobody else has, I don't want to be the one to go tell people in my neighborhood that or in Brookshire that. So I think this is a very exclusionary kind of thing that I guess I've just never wanted to be a part of in my whole life. So I have a real hard time with this.
Commissioner Seidel. You look like, I'm sorry, did you?
Yeah,
I agree with you.
I'm just kind of processing all these statements here, because why, if the people that live in that neighborhood, and you say, well, there's two that don't want it. Well, it got in here because people voted for it and people pushed to get it in here, so it's in here. And so that's when you say make everything equal, do we want to make everybody's taxes equal? You know, no, we don't. We want, when you live on a lakefront lot and you want to apply for a split, spend $6,000 and tell the city. When, you know, and if in these neighborhoods, if they want to keep the lot splits from happening, they have an ordinance that says you got to pay $6,000 to make that happen. What's wrong with that?
So let me answer that question for you. So you've been up here long enough. You know that certain things happen in certain areas in the city, or certain times we oftentimes complain that people are not aware of some of the things that are happening. I would promise you the majority of the property owners in Orwin Manor did not understand or did not know that in 2009 this was added into the comprehensive plan.
Right.
That they were prohibited from even asking for a lot split. And so basically they were just hit with a $6,000 surcharge if they just had the thought one day, hey, maybe I want to go down and see if I can split my lot.
Right. I don't disagree with you, but what I'm saying is that the developer can pay the $6,000.
How do you know it's a developer?
Well, even if it's the individual, they're looking to maximize their profits off of that property, which is going to change the character of the neighborhood.
And so what happens if the application is denied? So they spent $6,000 to split their lot and it was denied.
That's what they risk going in. I mean, that's the risk you take on these things.
And you've imposed that fee on them with them not even knowing that fee was imposed on them in 2009.
They would investigate when they go to do this lot split. I mean, it's...
And by that time, it's too late because now they have a $6,000 fee if they decide to move forward.
Why is it coming up in 2017 if it happened in 2009?
Because Mrs. Black brought it up, and I said,
right.
This is crazy that we have certain areas carved out that people actually have to pay extra than everybody else in the city.
Lakefront.
My point is, it's come up once since 2009.
Lakefront, but I'm talking...
Why are we going in and changing our comp plan because of an issue that came up once since 2009? That's my point.
Especially when we just debated this comp plan ad nauseum 16 months ago.
That's fine. And I've had some people that you're very familiar with complain that we didn't have enough discussion about the comp plan. So
well, that,
interesting
there
to
will
hear
all,
you
there
title
will always
it ad
be. There will always be, but you know and I know that we went around the barn a lot of times about the policies. And
Mr. Mayor, may I have the floor?
Commissioner
Cooper still has the floor.
Sir, I certainly can, Peter. To me, there is no reason to change the existing comprehensive plan policies. We have had nothing come before us that would lead us to feel that was necessary. We had one homeowner who happened to have a 3-acre lot on the lake, so there was great financial gain in that situation. Plus, the lots there were not incompatible with what was going on there. Plus, she wasn't prohibited from asking. She just had to pay.
No,
she wasn't prohibited. She had to pay for the public notice. That's quite different than her not being allowed to ask. So for me, I'm very comfortable with these policies. And if you really were only asking about three policies, I wish you had said that so that I wouldn't have had to look at all the policies.
Well, it's good that we had a chance to
just
them.
The three.
Well, I think
anyway,
there was probably I'll just answer that one quick question for you. I think there was just some communication. I want to see where, from a prohibited standpoint, the language was used in the comp plan regarding similar situations. I think staff did a great job of pulling together all the prohibits in the city.
The only difference to that, Steve, is because I was given an agenda packet that said we were looking at all the prohibits, I wasn't able to do the finite research that I would have needed to do to evaluate just the lot split policies, just three of them. So I'm happy to look at this, but I'm not ready to send it back for an ordinance.
Mr. Weldon.
Yes, I thought it was a really good exercise for each of us to have the opportunity to have all these prohibited language things presented in one context, and it's good for the citizens too to understand more about how the comp plan actually works in practice. I went through all of these things. There were 20 some. How many were there?
28
of them.
27.
And most of them pertain to uses and so forth, which I wholly agree with almost everything as it's written. I did raise the same issue that the mayor raised
here with Jeff about those same things that the mayor brought up because of the apparent unfairness of it relative to all the people who are not in that circumstance. However, I'm not gonna, it's obviously we have a 2-2 situation right now, and I've asked for more information, and I'm not gonna move forward with it on this basis without that information. So, you know, for what it's worth, that seems how it's gonna come out.
So here's what I would ask then, Peter, if you don't mind, and see if I can at least get you for more information also.
Yeah.
I'd like to take a look at 24 and 25 with the prohibit language removed, so it treats all neighborhoods in the city of Winter Park equally.
You mean
so
23 and 24, back, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, sir, 23, 24, thank you. So 23, 24. And so the lakefront, I understand, creates additional challenges. So
I would like to just point something out as a practical matter to those who take this whole issue very personally. And are very passionate about it, and I understand that, and I accept that. But the practical implication of changing it is, in those two areas, is that it's more likely that someone's going to come and request a lot split because they, quote, only have to spend $500 instead of $6,000. So if the language didn't say prohibit, you can anticipate more applications for lot splits where all of the relevant neighbors are still informed.
Sure.
And those who follow these things in terms of Carolyn's priority in terms of how it's going to impact her judgment as to the aesthetics of that neighborhood, they also have the same opportunity to be informed, and they tend to be the ones who follow the workings of the commission anyway. So I'm not too concerned about that, but I want to see what the impact is in those neighborhoods of making the change before I make a final judgment as to whether or not I think it's a good idea or not.
So, Peter, would you agree then to have them, as I just offered, to have, if I can get two other nods, to have staff at least look to see what the language would look like if they were moved on 23 and 24, the prohibit language?
Well, I think what you do is just take them out.
Okay. Would you like to see at least see what that is, what those ordinances would look like?
Well, they'd look exactly the way they do now.
So what information are you looking to come back from staff?
I'm looking specifically for if we took the prohibit language out, and I'm interested in the lots, in the lakefront lots as well. Okay. If we took the prohibit language out of number 4, 23, and 24, or removed it entirely, how many lots and where are they located would then be eligible for splits under the current code without a variance?
I can support that.
All right.
Okay, you have three
because
nods.
Because that will tell us what the impact's going to be of this change.
You have three nods on that.
Okay.
Or what the impact could be, because the
right.
other
not,
thing
not
we need to keep in mind is everybody up here wants to keep the character
I
of Winter
it's
Park.
Kind of silly, isn't it?
And then everybody up here also looks at the fact that we don't want to become an exclusionary group of people who decide that our friend lives here, so they get to have this and this one I have that. That's what I find so offensive about it. So I'm very happy to put it all the same.
Mr. Seidel, then we'll wrap this thing up.
Yep, I would say that the impact on the Orwin Manor neighborhood, when you start to see the splitting of lots and the demo of the current character houses within that neighborhood, and you would see that particular neighborhood change completely because we haven't done anything as a commission to try and protect
well,
the character
how many
of that
lots
neighborhood because for the reasons that you guys don't want to have any kind of architectural, when I say you guys, we've discussed this issue before, you don't want any architectural reviews, you don't want to put any kind of character controls within these neighborhoods. The only control we have to make sure that, you know, those houses, because once you start tearing the houses down, everyone else will say, well, I might as well do it, everyone else is doing it. And so that whole neighborhood will lose the character that it has, and it will look completely different. Like, we all got the thing on the Orange Avenue thing, and it showed that great sign that said, you know, Winter Park, the city of homes, used to be a big arch going over Orange Avenue, right? And, you know, that was great. And to me, that's what, you know, that's what this is doing. So to me, the impact of changing the policy is the promotion of lot splits. And once you start that domino, you will see, I believe, in Orwin Manor will end up like some of the other neighborhoods.
That's why I want to see the
is that
the
good or bad? We can debate that, but I think exactly. That's what would happen. Right now, it says lot splits are prohibited in this neighborhood.
I understand.
Right?
So people are discouraged.
By the way, but they're
lot splits that require a variance.
What's that?
They're allowed to do it.
They can pay $6,000
to ask the question.
Correct, but from a legal perspective, we have standing to say.
Hold on 1 second. You still have the floor, sir. Go ahead.
We have a much better legal standing to say it is prohibited to ask for that.
It's got nothing to do with legal standing.
I'd like to clarify something.
Mr. Will.
Craig, my understanding of it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, the current language prohibits the request for a variance. If the lot already meets the size standard that allows for a split under the general language, nothing is required to split that lot. It's only a request for a variance from the existing lot width standards.
Correct.
So that means that lots have to be 150 feet wide. And if there are none in Orwin Manor, there are none. And this language applies to every other lot that is less than 150 feet, right?
Well, what they will get is you will get the, well, this lot's 70 foot wide, but it meets everything except for the width. And
right.
So we want to come in here and we're going to ask for the variance because, and staff should say, no, you don't meet it, but then the commission has the option of saying.
I understand.
Okay, we're going to move forward. We gave staff direction, but again, I just want to reiterate, my only action here was to try to eliminate the unfairness to two neighborhoods in this community that nobody else has to go through for actually just asking the question, would you consider splitting this lot for me?
And okay. The direction that we gave them, Steve, when you spoke, you said that you were removing policy number 4, which is the lakefront.
I'm sorry, the direction we gave was Mr. Weldon's direction.
I
supported his direction
not
to look
yours.
Into the was to look into
the impact of that.
The impact of that. That's all they're coming back with. To share with us the number of properties
and where they are. I'd like to see the plats.
Okay. Fee schedule. Randy.
Yes, sir. This is the annual review of the fee schedule. You have in the title sheet and in the beginning of the fee schedule, a listing of those that have been proposed to change. These changes are reflected in the budget that is before you. So I can bring Wes up to answer any specific questions about the individual fees if you'd like. But
I hate to get down to that level. I did have one question, though, and that was Showalter Stadium, Wes, and perhaps this is a question for Jason, but I wanted to make sure I understood. You have current fee to rent Showalter Stadium for less than 400 people, 2-hour minimum, including the starting box. If you before 5 p.m. per hour, it's $29. Doesn't matter how many attendees, just $29 per hour to rent the entire stadium before 5 p.m.
If you look down lower, I had that question too, but it looks like it's a different deal than that.
That's where I was kind of confused.
Where are we looking?
It's on page 3.
Page 3 of 77 in the PDF.
These are total numbers, Jason, or are these per?
It depends on where you're.
Yeah.
Depends on where you're looking, because if you look under on page 3, there's Showalter Stadium, and then there's several different headings there. There's track only, field only, stadium. Well, those are your three main ones. So where are we? Is it the track only?
Multi-purpose fields, A1, A2. All right, let's go to Showalter Field. Let's just stay on Showalter Field. Track only.
Right.
Before, it's 20. It's now going to be $30 to rent the track.
Just the track.
Track only, $30 per hour.
Not per person.
Not per person.
No, that's per hour just for the track.
And that's a regional rate. I mean, that's a competitive rate. $30 an hour.
Yeah.
No matter how many people.
Gosh,
are there.
That just seems so low.
Yeah. Well, less than 400, so.
Less than 400.
Right.
So you and 399 friends. Wow. Okay. And that, as I said, that or as
do
you,
we cover
well,
the,
that doesn't
the
open
maintenance
the stadium,
of that?
Right? That's just
no.
Track.
That's just for the track.
It's like
not
track
for
practice,
all the.
Right?
Yeah, it's like a track practice.
No, I
not a whole
does
event.
It, that track has to be redone
school?
Though every 10
that,
years, right?
The it's pretty. Schools, well, no, school's got their own.
Are you recouping enough to replace the track in the amount of time that it needs to be replaced to be maintained?
Yes,
we are. So it's covering the cost.
Yes.
Okay. That was really
but,
the only
but like I said, that's
sure I
just,
reading that
just that is just for a track practice. If you're running a big track event, then you would be looking at a higher fee.
Right, because you're using the whole stands.
Right.
No, I understand that.
And will you clarify for me, don't we look at this fee schedule twice a year, not yes. just once a year?
I think it was it last year that we converted to just doing it once a year.
Oh, so this is just once a year. I am very grateful for that because I would not like to increase these fees another time this
However,
year.
We can go through this at any time. This
that's
is not
that's correct.
I know it is, but I just think that it's a bad form if we can just do it once a year.
I appreciate that.
But form is not always considered.
I think that's why we moved it. Commissioner Cooper.
I just have one more question for Jason. Jason, I noticed there are a lot of new fees in here that talk about renting the entire park areas. Is that?
Where are you, Commissioner?
Sorry, I didn't mark them. Yeah, I didn't mark them. There were just a lot of new fees, like for.
No, I'm good, thanks.
You've got Alice's Pond on the north that, side, those south are, side.
Those are Mead Botanical Garden fees, and they've monetized some of the different areas. To,
something's wrong with your mind.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. Mead Botanical Gardens, the Inc. has monetized some of those areas, having the Alice's Pond to have rent weddings, and those are those areas of that park.
So do these fees go to the city or to the Mead Garden Inc.?
Those go towards Mead Garden Inc.
Okay, so this is Mead Garden Inc.'s
right.
fee structure
right.
for
we
their
have to
facilities.
Right, we have to approve it for our, we have to approve it as part of the fee schedule. Okay.
Right. My only concern is making sure that when taxpayers on a Sunday afternoon want to take their kids and go be in one of right. our parks, we haven't got all of them rented out. That's my only concern. Yeah. So the question is this kind of fee structure in every one of our parks? That they can rent the entire facilities?
Yes, all of our parks have a park rental fee where you can rent the park as an entire park.
Can you look at that for me and make sure that on any given day our residents can go and enjoy the parks with their kids and toss a ball and play with their dogs? I want to make sure we just haven't got everything locked down so that and I do appreciate the need for revenue. I appreciate that.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be right now. I'd just like you to look at it.
Sure.
You can always bring it back up if you need to.
I'll jump on that with you. That's been a big concern of mine. I think there are certain areas within certain parks that are always open. There's places in MLK where you can throw a ball or something, but
right.
the fields are all rented out, you know, most
right.
of the time.
And
when they're not rented out for paying customers, they are shut down. They're you're not allowing play on them.
For the most part,
but
yes.
There are certain areas that you can go throw a ball behind the fields, but the fields themselves are locked
maybe
down.
Maybe our children are so organized now that they don't have the opportunities that we had. But I do remember as a community, as a child, going and playing.
We keep field space available even on our regular field. On our
I'm sorry, can
we
I only hear Randy and Peter? I can't
we
hear
do
you.
Keep athletic fields when they're not in use. If there is availability for open play. At MLK, there's no fences on the fields, so if folks want to come out on a day when they're not rented and throw a ball, we're not going to throw anyone off.
I would just love for you to take a look. Give me a call. I'll
sure.
come over and sit with you. I just want to see that within every one of our parks, there are places for families to simply come and enjoy.
Sure. So,
thank you.
Any other questions? We'll look for a motion.
I'll move it.
Okay. I'll second.
Great. Let's open up the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission on item 11A? Now is your turn. Seeing none, I'll close the floor to public comment. Y'all ready to vote? Cindy, please read the roll.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Folks, we're going to switch over to commission reports now because we do have some time to kill before the 5 o'clock hour where I need to read some things. So, Commissioner Seidel, now it's your turn, sir.
My coffee talk is Thursday morning this week, so anyone here that wants to show up and hang out. And that is at the... Winter Park Country Club, correct. The other item I wanted to mention was that, again, with Orwin Manor and Orange Avenue, the report that was submitted to us, put together by the association and a few other folks on some possible traffic calming measures. I just wanted to share that publicly and kind of get what our thoughts were on it and what the next steps might be if there are next steps. Is this something that what our involvement needs to be? It sounds like there's a lot of other people involved now as well.
Could you suggest perhaps a workshop on that? I'd be happy to attend if that.
Well, that's kind of what I'm asking. Is they've kind of just handed the report over and said here, right?
And so that's what, you know, for us, I mean, there's obviously, you know, the perception in the neighborhood is they would like it to be a more neighborhood-friendly road. And right. So how do we make that happen? And is that in working with our partners? Because it's not just within the city. It's also in the city of Orlando, right?
Right.
And it's also a DOT road.
Right.
So, but I don't think leaving it as it is the best option for us. I think we need to be looking at it and trying to figure out the best things to do.
I don't recall the details off the top of my head. I wasn't prepared to talk about that, but I did read it. I recall that there were some recommendations of things that could be done. I don't remember the specifics exactly right off the top of my head, but I expect that the city would, at a minimum, support those possibilities, because by just mentioning them as possibilities, FDOT is opening the door to doing it, right?
Yeah, I think, can we have it as an agenda item for staff to present their review of the document?
Sure.
And what the next step should be? Is that a fair thing to do?
I like
and then
that process.
Let's, and if the Orland Manor folks want to come present it at that
That's
time
fine.
As well, it's like,
more power to them.
But I think it would be good to have DOT here, though. I think that
if they're willing to come.
Yeah. That would be
bad. I understand. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I'm having a little trouble with this one, too, okay? Because we know that Orland Manor already got something in the comp plan a while back, so they may come out and do all this. But, guys, I can tell you many other communities in Winter Park who are just as frustrated with their traffic and their cut-through traffic. And so I think this is bigger than just, are we going to do what this report said? It's got to be more like, how are we as a city going to deal with the fact that the communities are wanting to come together and bring us ideas? Because that's the real crux of it to me. Because if the traffic engineers and our roads people, they have to look at it, but maybe we do need a mechanism by which the people can discuss this, because I don't know of a community out there that's not frustrated with that.
Right.
So that I think we need to consider all of our community, not, I mean, I love Orland Manor, but I don't want them to just be the considered part of Winter Park.
Let me say that I see this, you know, this was prompted by a very tragic, irresponsible act. By someone who was going over 100 miles an hour on that road. You know, it didn't matter really what the circumstances were. It was obviously very disheartening to the neighborhood for very understandable reasons. And what I see this as being is an opportunity to address what Sarah's talking about as an example case of where we start. That is where we start in our relationship with FDOT. There are some things that can be done traffic management wise that FDOT generally is totally against. And if we can build a relationship and provide some political support for changing Orange Avenue, we can then try to find some political support for changing Fairbanks. And you know, I think that would be a long-term positive for the city. But I understand that the process is long and hard and involves a lot of conflicting priorities among a lot of constituencies. But I'm willing to start the process.
Well, I'd hate to say that the process has been started. We have had staff working with FDOT and talking with FDOT about possibilities there. So,
well, good. I look forward to their recommendations.
They have presented to us before, and they've talked about what DOT. So they have shared DOT's thoughts on the matter before, but you need three votes to Commissioner. What would you like to do, Mr. Seidel? If you don't mind, let me ask him that question. And certainly, what would you like to do? Have staff present? What would you like, sir?
Well, is there a go forward strategy to, like, they had done some initial study and got back to us, and then the residents are now coordinating with some of these other people, and it's I'm just asking kind of as they continue to push this. I want to understand what our role should be or could be, and for us to decide, okay, this is where we're at. I mean, this is obviously, it's they've coordinated with other, or county commissioner within this area as well in the city of Orlando. So to me, I just don't want to be in the dark. I want to know where we should sit with it, and if our role just needs to be to stand by and wait, or if our role needs to be proactive and we decide, well, we don't want to be proactive because we have all these other streets, or is it, you know, how can we help?
Well, what is proactive? So, I mean,
proactive could be we vote a resolution that we want the DOT to study safety improvements on Orange Avenue. We submit that to the.
I would add the DOT. Right? I would add Fairbanks of 1792 to that request.
That's fine.
Yeah, I'm okay. Thought I would.
They're doing 1792 right now. Mm-hmm. We have a study going on with 1792. Right. So they just started that.
Right.
So I can't think of any other roads in the city except for the Fairbanks. Curve over here on Alomo, where you get people.
You got anything to say on this, Troy?
Zooming.
What's happening?
We got till 5 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
Sure. No, don't feel like you have to stop.
You've got 15 minutes.
Troy, can you give us an update on Orange Avenue, please?
Well, we received the final report from the DOT, and there were some recommendations in there. We received this report from the neighborhood, and they, you know, presented their desires. There were some desires in that report that were
in conflict with the DOT.
Okay. And so, you know, we'll bring forward where we left it with y'all from the DOT's report.
So can I ask this, Troy, just to kind of circle this down then? So next meeting, can we have a presentation from staff on FDOT and what their recommendations are for that, as well as what the thoughts of some of the neighbors were? Can you just bring us down so we have something to react to rather
and
than
staff
just
judgment as to what's smart?
Yeah, we can do that.
Great.
To determine the neighborhood's representation, we'll use their report. I mean, we're not going to survey the neighbor
individually. Well, I think
individually.
That's fair, but there are people that live in that neighborhood that may not be part of the homeowners association. So I want to make sure we're careful. It's also as a corridor, that road affects the rest of the city too. So it's got that added concern, of how it's dealt with. It's not just a small neighborhood road. So we need to be cognizant of the fact that it serves multiple purposes.
Okay.
And can I add something?
Sure.
Can you also bring to us what the process is for people who have a concern about cut-through traffic or something like that? Do we have one, and what is it? I mean, y'all have been nothing but accommodating whenever we've sent you all stuff, but is there something that we should know, or is there a certain thing we should tell people that have that as a concern?
Yes.
And
we'll bring that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that would be a big help.
Okay.
Commissioner.
Troy, for me, it's more holistic because I would actually look to you to be telling me throughout the city, our master plan says we need to attack this first and then this, and your list of priorities. And I know a few years ago, maybe 2 years ago, it feels like yesterday, but we went through a transportation plan that either you had fixed or your board. Does your board get involved in the transportation plan? I know for years we've had this split between ped and bike, and maybe overemphasis on ped and bike at the expense of a master transportation plan.
Yeah.
So, but I'd like it to be in your hands at your level so that we could feel comfortable that we are treating all of our neighborhoods fairly. I just don't understand how we do that as a community. So maybe when you're talking to us, if you could
I'll bring the previous stuff that we've done, and we can.
It's a lot of bike and ped,
a course,
I think, overwhelmingly.
Yeah, it's
overwhelmingly.
Changing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think
we changed to the transportation board just for that reason.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, Commissioner Seidel, you still have the floor, sir.
Thank you. Just one last item I wanted to talk about was, we've all been receiving these emails on updating the comp plan for the corridors, and our Winter Park email talked about looking at these corridors. And one of the things that I don't want to get lost in this is that with the new planner coming in, we had looked at the green space corridors. And to me, we really should identify the green space corridors to be working in conjunction with the other corridors, not vice versa. And so it's like, I don't want us to lose that emphasis of that green space plan that we had talked about and putting, I understand staff has identified like 10 possible corridors. And do we narrow it down to 3 and do some more study on those? But I mean, that was a big part of our vision process, was the green space. And so I don't want us to lose sight of that. And I think that can help. I've always looked at this mixed use options as, if we had a green space plan in place, it's a lot easier to say, well, look, I'm giving this, but I'm getting that. Mm-hmm. And it can help in the end. We can have what some of the people want for the city with the mixed use and what some of the people want with the green space. Mm-hmm. But without that green space backbone for us to know, this is, we want to connect A to B and B to C and C to D, you don't have a good negotiating position. You just say, well, we'll get whatever green space is part of this mixed use plan. And so that's what I'm getting at, is I would rather be able to have a green space plan laid out that then ties into the mixed use plan that we're looking at, and then make the decisions as to, is this a reasonable mixed use for this area, and give the development community some options to pursue to offset some perceived impacts. So I don't want us to lose sight of our green space plan.
That's what I'm certainly on board with the concept, Greg. And certainly the Progress Point, property can be swapped, can be, partially parked, can be swapped for park, can be swapped in part for park. I mean, I'm very open to recommending a green space context for Orange Avenue based upon our ownership of Progress Point. Not necessarily using all of it or even half of it, but we have something to contribute to the green space. Throughout the rest of the city, just a comment. I've been reading about website comments and so forth, and a couple of people have noted with regard to the green space plan the need for a green space plan, there's no way to buy the private property that would be required to implement it. There's no practical way to do that. Well, I would love to work on a practical way to do that, if there is a practical way to do that.
Well, you just said the practical way. We trade.
Yes, right? I understand.
Right, so there's practical ways. But
the same owners have to be interested in, who own what we're interested in extending as green space, have to own another piece of property they want something done on, right? So it's not that simple, and I'm all open to encouraging all the development community, hello development community, to provide us with ways to make it happen that serve their interest.
Yeah, no, I would agree it's not that simple, but starting with, this is our recommended corridors and we'd like to see how these things work. We have to know what we want to be able to do anything about it. That's what I'm saying. Right now, we don't have
I've seen lines on pieces of paper. I haven't seen any plan.
Right, and so that's the evaluation.
We haven't funded a plan. Until we fund a plan, there won't be one.
How do we fund it?
We haven't adopted a plan.
The land.
Okay, folks. Let's keep moving. Mr. Seidel.
Yeah, I think you guys are getting into the design stage. I'm not even there yet, right? This is concept.
So what would
you
ask for, Mr. Seidel?
So yeah, just we had talked about.
Try to get you down to an ask here, sir.
Yeah, the staff had done the 10 concepts, and so I think staff can narrow those down to maybe 3 or 4 to take some initial analysis of. And so for them to present those, and for us to, as the commission, decide, hey, we like these ones, or we're not even going to look at this one. We don't think it's worth our time.
So would you ask for that to, then I'm trying to get you to a place. Would you ask for that to be brought back at the next?
Well, we have a new planner coming.
Okay.
And I don't want
so
him
would
to,
you like
I,
to wait?
I was joking when I said everything done October 5th,
I didn't hear you say that.
I can
so
definitely
would you like
wait
to wait to hear from the new planner when he comes in after he has some
correct.
Time to review?
That's
okay,
right.
He may have some relevant
right.
experience.
Right, good. Exactly. Like that's, so
so
that's,
let's plan on that. We'll re-bring that back up when he joins the fray here.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Ms. Sprinkle.
Well, only that this whole town got built without all of this. This whole town got built without any of this. This whole town got built in a very, very comfortable way. We only want to make it better for the future. And sometimes I think we are messing with things we don't need to be messing with. So I think we have to get it down to what are the 3 to 5 things that we need to be doing. Those 3 to 5 things, we are pretty clear on what they are, and we go forward with those. And so sometimes I feel like up here we are getting in a lot of people's business that we don't belong in. But speaking of which, I will comment on one little thing, which was I happened to get my taxes and look at them the other day. And at 5:00 today, if you want to say anything to the tax assessor, apparently we have a public hearing on the tax rate. and I was shocked that one of my properties went up $90,000 in 1 year. Okay, $90,000 in 1 year, and frankly, it's
that's
not.
A residential piece
that's
property.
A residential piece of property.
Because of the assessed value.
Yes.
They reassess the value, and they reassess the value because things around there are going for a lot more. And I said, the problem is, I'm not planning on selling it. So I do have a problem with what we're doing. Okay, what
well,
we're doing is a community.
It. I'm not doing
we're
it.
Not doing it, guys. But this it. No, I understand that I don't get to control this. I understand I can go and fight it, but I also understand that that was done because of everything else we've done. It all fits together.
Yes.
It does all fit together. So as a community, that's really sort of where I am right now. I'm looking at how does this transportation impact this green, and how does this green impact these water and these lakes? Because all of them fit together, and I just want us to keep that big picture in mind. That's
I'm
all.
With you.
Commissioner Cooper.
When we were talking about the budget, Peter, I mentioned the commercial parks usage fee. A lot of people may not realize in Winter Park, the parks usage fee is only on residential of a certain number of units.
Impact fees,
yeah. Yes. And there is a vehicle where in some communities they actually, when commercial development comes on board, they also are assessed a parks usage fee for the use of our parks at lunch, in the afternoons, you know, they jog before they go home, they might go over and have a picnic in the park. And I think at that point in time, I didn't hear from too many people, but I think Peter gave me the idea perhaps we could talk about that. So I'm wondering if we could.
What are we going
to
talk about?
I'm surprised if I indicated that I'm willing to add tax dollars onto our commercial property owners when they're already, you know, paying for the subsidies that us homesteaded property owners receive. And so I'm not interested in that.
Especially following Commissioner Sprinkle's comments.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, I thought she was going to say let's lower the millage rate. That's what I was thinking.
I'll go back and listen again. But obviously you are not interested. So then my question becomes, are two other people perhaps interested in allowing our commercial developers to contribute in the way of helping us to maintain and increase our park space?
Forcefully contribute?
It's an impact fee. Yes, we're allowing them the opportunity of paying an impact fee.
That's a really sweet.
Commissioner, you're talking to a commission that refunded permit fees. Just remember that, okay?
So I'm taking that as a no. So I probably shouldn't ask you how you feel about transportation impact fees. One of the planning directors that we did not choose, one of the things that jumped out at me on his resume was his commitment to having growth pay for growth. And I think this is an extraordinary community. I think most commercial developers would like to participate in our community, and we don't charge transportation impact fees. We're not collecting affordable housing fees, and we're saying we do not want to consider parks usage fees on commercial. And yet I don't believe that commercial development is going to go away just because we ask them to contribute. I got a call recently from someone who just built down in either Orange County and Orlando telling me they paid $700,000 in transportation fees. We have transportation issues. This would be not a total panacea, but it would help us deal with these transportation issues that we have. So I understand, I hear you. I don't understand, but I do hear that you're not interested, but I would love for you to please think about it some more. And I will get off my soapbox, but I just don't think, especially with the CRA, that wasn't finished, especially with the CRA and the fact that those tax dollars go into the CRA fund and not into the general fund, it would be very helpful to have more than just the single family property owners helping to fund these things. And so I really would like you to think about it.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to, but I appreciate that I misunderstood you if that was the case.
So that's all I have to say.
I can support investigating anything. I would certainly like to wait until we have our new planning director to get their perspective on some of these things. I don't think your precept is incorrect there, but I think we just have to be careful about how we go about it.
Yeah, I would just love to see growth contributing more to.
I think growth does.
They are contributing substantially. In fact, they.
You're saying you want it more. I understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just a
little Commissioner
and
Wells?
One last thing, charter amendments. I know there are.
You really want to take that on?
Are
now?
There any left?
There are. Unfortunately, there are a few. Is anybody interested here? I had somebody contact me and ask me if we would like a presentation on the charter amendments for any of our residents. And
who wants to make a presentation?
I think the League of Women Voters. I hope
they are welcome to send us whatever they think is wise at any time.
I think so too. I feel pretty comfortable about
the
neutrality.
I wouldn't support a presentation. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this was just for our residents, and I was just trying to see if we're interested in providing facility or allowing.
I believe they have documentation on their website, don't they?
Yeah.
So we can certainly anybody who wants to ask, they can. Yeah. We can direct them there.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
And they're free to reach out to us individually, too, if they want.
Vice Mayor Wilden.
Yes. This will be quick, I guess. I met this morning with the people at the DePue Nursing Center so that I could learn more about their operation.
How'd that crow taste?
Yes, and I actually ate my shoe while I was there. I actually.
Oh, so they really are.
What? you want to stick it to me too?
No, I didn't know.
At any rate, they reminded me of our conversation reminded me of something that I've spoken with people about before, and I wanted to see if the commission might have a general agreement with the idea that we may be able to put some substance to it. Regardless of how you feel about having our taxpayers fund nonprofits in the city, and it gets very political, obviously, when that happens. What we all do is support our nonprofits. We're all here to support all aspects of our community that are positive and helpful to our residents. And yet we do nothing to help these nonprofits at least communicate what they're about. And I thought maybe a simple idea might be to have one half of one page of the quarterly newsletter each time focused on one particular nonprofit. Get a list of them on the website with links to their people
and all that kind of stuff.
Just ways to help them promote their charter so that the taxpayers can make the donations they want.
Well, the only reason I would say that I don't mind that, Peter. I just don't know who you choose and how you go through the vetting, the process.
Well, there are a limited number of 501c3s in the city.
I don't think we have anything in that newsletter that's anything like that, but I wouldn't mind.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing how many 501c3s
are in the city limits.
We might be able to facilitate, especially
on.
I'd like to see the
wheel. Limit to the ones that we fund. That would be a nice way to limit it. Limit it to the ones that we fund.
Well, that denies the opportunity for anyone else who we don't fund.
And so you have more people asking for funding? So
the website's
what you're going to have.
Having them come here and make the presentation, if there are 400.
Well, I threw the idea out. Maybe a place to start is to ask staff to prepare a list of all the 501c3s with a link to their 990 forms.
Oh, that's going to be huge.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
Okay.
I want to, we'll start with the number and the names. And then if it looks like it's worth doing.
I think you have three nods.
I don't think I got your nod.
How does that differ than what we're doing with the arts and culture stuff?
Well, it's part of the same idea.
Yeah, we're already doing it with those.
Yeah.
When we start supporting DePue, it opens the door for everyone who's a social service nonprofit to start asking for money. And I think our role there might be better served in the long run by informing our constituents about all the really good charitable work that goes on from a social services point of view in the city, as well as from an arts and cultural standpoint. That's all.
Okay. Anything
else? That's it.
Great. I have no report. Randy, do you want me to move into millage the opening comments here and then take all comments at one time? Or why don't we do this, actually? Why don't I take Why don't I take public comments in case anybody came to discuss that prior to any budget meetings?
Okay.
So, folks, we're going to open up the floor to anybody that would like to make a comment on anything that's not on this agenda. That includes the budget. We will be having, we'll be taking budget comments after after the budget discussion. So anything that's not on the agenda, if you'd like to address the commission, now's your time.
I'll explain when I get up here then.
Okay.
Thank you. Sally Flynn, 1400 Highland Road. This has already been on the agenda, but the problem is we don't ever get a chance to express to you what you're thinking about until you get an ordinance, and then that's too late. I think this is exactly when you were talking about Orwin Manor in particular, and I think Commissioner Seidel hit it exactly right, but this is where the breakdown comes in a conversation between the city government and residents. For instance, Orwin Manor residents asked for what you have in that comp plan. They came and they didn't care that it was going to cost them. They wanted it prohibited. And when you say you don't think very many of them know about it, I'll bet the Orwin Manor residents are very well informed on that. But I think what should happen is, if you believe that you want to take it out, you should contact the Orwin Manor residents, explain to them what it is in the comp plan now, and what it will be if you take the prohibit out. So all the Orwin Manor residents know what's happening. Otherwise, you're going to have them down here lining this wall. And you really, you know, you're not, they didn't, the city didn't do that to them. They did it to themselves. So why would you take it away from them when they asked for it? And I just think there needs to be a lot more conversation between the commission and the city and like those residents if you're going to do something. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Council.
Good afternoon.
Mayor. My concern.
Ms. Bryan-Hall, would you just lower the microphone?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Said out of box.
Thank you. 331 West Lyman Avenue, and I hope I speak very clearly because I had a little dental work done. So I hope my words come out plainly. My concern is my historical home that was designated in 2017. First of all, I would like to thank Commissioner Cooper, Sprinkle, and Sadell, and also Brooke Wise for the design that he did for the porch and also the handicap ramp and the walkway. But in that, the house looks lovely from a distance. I do not understand how the city, with the codes, that you would give a certificate of completion when I sent letters of complaint, of concerns that I had with my home, that the windows can go up only 2 inches and three other windows. I sent emails, there's a trail of emails, but yet and still, I never got a satisfaction certificate. I have sent letters to the contractor, Terrell Enterprise. The house home was approved in April 2018. Since then, they refused to come back to correct anything. I had to hire a private surveyor. No, he wasn't surveyor, but he came out to inspect the house. And many of the things that I found in my complaint form that I sent to Brookwise, Doris Storms, and all of those in planning, he addressed the same thing. But to this day, hasn't anything been done. So I don't understand how you all will hire someone, a contractor, and he violates the codes. And yet and still the codes are not, they have not come back to correct them. So I'm sending letters out because I am very disappointed, highly disappointed. I paid out of my fund pocket $33,600 to get my home repaired, with the electrical as well as the outside. And as of today, it has not been rectified. So that is my concerns.
Ms. Hall, can I just ask a question? we don't normally do this, but I want to make sure I'm giving staff complete direction. You're upset with your contractor?
It's your contract. It's just
it was a contract. It was a city-funded
I understand. Rehab. We so, there was a request for some rehabilitation funding,
right?
But we didn't hire a contractor. The city.
Yes, the city did. They right. are the ones that recommended right. that I hire this guy.
Okay. We.
So you're aware of this, Randy? You
yes, know what's going yes, on? Yes, okay. sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Brenhall.
Thank you.
I'm going to raise the mic.
There we go.
Good evening. Mary Daniels, 650 Canton Avenue. This was on the agenda. I'm really here to get clarification. I'm not sure what you all did on item 10-8. You know, you had plenty of conversation, and then it just sort of ended.
Is that your only comment? Because I can clarify for you.
That's why I'm here.
Sure. So what we asked staff to do was go back and look at the number of properties affected by if we made any changes to the prohibit language in item, if I remember right, it was 6, 23, and 24.
4,
23, and 24. Mm-hmm. So they're going to come back and present to us and talk to us about if they remove the prohibit language, how many properties would be affected.
Okay, and the last thing on that, I think a lot of people were here because I was totally confused with what was, you know, I'm looking at the 27 properties and like Sarah said, it affects more than just those three communities that you were speaking of. And it makes people think that I had a whole page of notes where it affects Hanover Square community.
Yeah.
And I think it's the way it was presented that caused the confusion, because I was concerned and I had quite a bit of notes there to be discussed. And that was my concern, is that you need more information. Right. And, you know, if you're talking about three communities, you should be considered by all the communities. And I think some of the things that happen don't frown.
No. I'm curious as to what you're trying to get to.
What I'm trying to get to is we were talking about the word prohibit, mm-hmm. and you're talking about a verb and an adjective there. You're talking about if it's prohibited, that means you're going to prevent it. It's not going to be done. If it has been prohibited, it's already prohibited. So if you or any developer are requesting something, we know in advance that that's prohibited, so we are requesting something that we know can't be done in the first place.
That's not entirely
Peter,
true.
Peter, we all just right. don't address it. I'm trying not to do that. And I don't mean to cut you off, Ms. Daniels.
Okay.
But I think we can, rather than getting it back and forth, what I think you're trying to say is the entire document had 27 prohibits.
Exactly.
And that perhaps was a confusion between myself, because I asked specifically for the prohibit language in regarding variances and applying variance
right.
on lot splits.
Right.
And I think staff, trying to do a more complete dig into the comp plan, said there's 27 other prohibits in here that we thought we'd present.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the item came up, I just asked specifically about those areas. Anybody else could have addressed the other
mm-hmm.
areas in there
mm-hmm.
if they had any concerns, but those are the only three that we addressed simply because those are the only ones somebody wanted to talk about.
Okay.
So,
and I was here because I did have a concern if it included.
Okay,
the
but
other areas.
None of those came up. Those are still those are still where they are.
All right. Thank
you, Mayor.
You.
Appreciate it.
Mr. Mayor, just to follow up, any of those changes would have had to go through a process with citywide
sure.
notices.
Right.
Here.
And they
so
still
there weren't any changes
right.
on the
right.
on
there's
the agenda.
Even these discussion. Three will come
right.
back.
Anybody else? Okay, we're gonna close the floor to public comment. Peter, are you do you need me to read these? Are you going to take the, Randy, you want me to just read this and then move through?
Yes, sir, and then the city attorney needs to read the world's longest ordinance
yeah.
title.
Yeah, do you need to read the ordinance first, Mr. City Attorney, or do you want to wait until we confirm that that's the way we're going?
I think I need to go ahead and read it.
Okay, go ahead.
Ordinance number blank, an ordinance of the city of Winter Park, Florida, adopting a 4.0923 mil ad valorem tax levy upon all real and personal property for appropriation to the general operating expenses of the city, a 0.1478 mil voted debt service levy upon all real and personal property for appropriation of the city of Winter Park, Florida general obligation bonds, series 2011, and a 0.3271 mil voted debt service levy upon all real and personal property for appropriation to the City of Winter Park, Florida, General Obligation Bonds, Series 2017.
So let's have a simultaneous public hearing. Can you also read the second ordinance, or would you like to until that's
yes,
approved?
Yes, we can do that, Mayor.
Thank you, sir.
Ordinance number blank, an ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, adopting the annual budget for the fiscal year beginning October 1, 2018 and ending September 30, 2019, and accompanying five-year capital improvement plan appropriating funds for the general fund designations, trust fund, stormwater utility fund, community redevelopment fund, federal forfeiture fund, police grant fund, debt service fund, water and sewer fund, electric utility fund, fleet maintenance fund, equipment replacement fund, employee insurance fund, general insurance fund, cemetery trust fund, general capital projects fund, and stormwater capital projects fund, providing for modifications, providing for amendments to set annual budget to carry forward the funding of purchase orders outstanding and unspent project budgets as of September 30, 2018, and authorizing transfer of funds herein appropriated between departments so long as the total fund appropriations shall not be increased thereby.
So, Randy, I had the city attorney read those first. Would you still like me to read the opening comments?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. The millage rate needed for fiscal year 2019 to generate the same property tax revenue for the city as in 2018, based on the property appraiser certification, is 3.8456 mils. The budget proposed by the staff with amendments generally agreed to by the city commission requires a millage of 4.0923 mils, which has been the rate levied by the city for the last 10 years. The proposed millage of 4.0923 mils would represent an increase in property taxes, not counting new construction and the city's dedicated increment value payment to the Community Redevelopment Agency of 6.42%. This increase in property taxes levied over the prior year is not due to any change in tax rate, but is due to the increase in assessed values of properties. In addition, a 0.1478 mil voted debt service is levied to cover the debt service of the general obligation bond, Series 2011, approved by the citizens of Winter Park at the May 16, 2000 bond referendum, as well as a 0.3271 mil voted debt service levied to cover the debt service of the general obligation bond, Series 2017, approved by the citizens of Winter Park at the March 15, 2016 bond referendum. We have had a simultaneous, we'll have a simultaneous public hearing. The city attorney has read the two ordinances. Randy, do you want me to open this up to public hearing now?
I think we should have a quick discussion before you open it up.
Okay, great.
If I may, the budget before you is the budget that I presented back at the first meeting in July with two changes, and Peter can correct me if I'm wrong, but at your budget work session, you asked us to add $10,000 in operating support for the Blue Bamboo, and you asked us to provide a $33,000 to Mead Botanical Garden, Inc. for the replacement of the flooring, and that money, and then it comes out of contingency, so that brings your contingency that was in the budget to $460,000.
So I don't recall the Blue Bamboo. I thought that didn't move forward. We did take 10,000 new money.
Yes, there were three.
15. I said 10, and went.
Okay, we got a third with that.
Yeah.
Yes, you did.
Who was the third? Was it me? I don't even remember.
Not me.
Probably me.
It was Greg.
Okay, fine. Thank you. I just wanted to confirm because I don't recall that. Okay.
So with that, we'd glad to answer any questions.
Any questions for the city manager? Nope. Let's open up the floor to public comment then. Folks, anybody wishing to address the commission on the item, on the agenda item for the budget, now is your time.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Chris Cortez. I'm the president and founder of the Blue Bamboo Center for the Arts in Winter Park. I wrote some things down. I just wanted to say, basically, thank you for considering us. We're very happy that we're here and being considered. If the funds are granted, 100% of the money will be distributed to performers at free events on Thursday night. This event is a unique opportunity for music students to perform with professional musicians. After some introductions, students are invited up to perform with the pros. We'd of course acknowledge our gratitude to the city for the funding and the promotion of the events. Some of our other community efforts include, recently we did an art show for homeless children. That's still going on at our venue. You could come by and actually make a donation for them. We'd really appreciate it. Second Harvest Food Bank also is getting ready to do a benefit with us. We've done hurricane benefits and benefits for musicians with health issues. We open the space to two community bands for rehearsals, and we work with Performing Arts of Maitland. Jeff Flowers is here, he'd like to speak too, to provide performance space for their volunteer community orchestras. Besides music, we also offer gallery space to many local visual artists, and our stage is also useful as a theatrical area. Based on donations alone, we're able to provide two free events per week, and we hope to continue that effort with your help. In closing, I'd like to invite you to attend an event, ideally on a Thursday, so you can experience that opportunity, but anytime really. And it's a very unique place, and I'd love for you to experience it. Thank you again for your consideration, and I hope we can earn your confidence.
Thank you, Mr. Cortez.
Jeff Park.
Thank you.
Excuse me, I'm Jeff Flowers, 117 Whitecap Circle, Maitland. I'm president of the Performing Arts of Maitland, but I'm also a board member of the Blue Bamboo. Good timing.
Is that an instrument?
We could use it probably. The Performing Arts of Maitland has also performed on the stage at the Mead Gardens, where we did four different annual performances there with our 100-piece symphony orchestra. So you have a terrific asset in the city for the arts. Both the park here that the Orlando OPO performs on frequently, I've been to a lot of those shows, the Mead Garden. This Blue Bamboo is a terrific asset of this city. You all need to go. I mean, you really need to experience it to see it. My theme with the Performing Arts Maitland is we bring the local performers onto the local stage. I mean, Orlando has the pros, Disney has the pros, all of these guys have a great venue in those commercial sites, but it's hard to get venues for kids coming up, wanting to approach the stage and for the first time and get their foot in the door. The Blue Bamboo offers them that. This program that Chris is outlining is a terrific opportunity for mentoring of young performers to get onto the stage and to see, you know, it's not a theoretical thing, you have to see it. This is, an opportunity that I don't know of any place where it exists. Even the schools that we have here, you know, are foreign to that. So this is a terrific thing that you're doing. You're mentoring the students that need this this place to go to. The Blue Bamboo is a terrific opportunity for your community and mine. The Borough Chamber has played there several times. It's not big enough for a 100-piece symphony orchestra. Our 20-piece chamber orchestra can fit in there. So I very much encourage you to continue to offer chances for art opportunities in our communities. I don't know if you're aware, the state of Florida cut funding to the arts this last year 90%. Now, if I told you, you know, your salary is going to be a divide by 10. I mean, are you really employed anymore? I mean, you know, are we funding the arts as a state? Not really. It's up to you, local community leaders, to step up to this plate now, and you're doing it. So thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Flowers. Okay, folks, we're going to close the floor to public comment. Any questions or amendments to the proposed budget? No? Excellent.
Not to the budget.
Not to the budget or the millage rate?
Thank you very much. I would like to make a motion regarding the millage rate. I would like to move that we reduce the millage rate to 4.0000 in reflection of the $6 million in increased tax revenue the city has received over the past several years, the success we've had at rebuilding our reserves, the prospect for realizing our full 30% reserve goal in the next year or two or several years based upon the properties that are available, the property on Lee Road that's available for sale, and the prospects for some changes on the progress point circumstances that will likely result in some revenue to the city. So that's my motion.
Okay. Do we see a second? That motion fails for lack of a second. Thank you. Any other questions or amendments to the proposed budget on the millage rate?
I just have a comment that we talked about the changing of the homestead exemption, right? Mm-hmm. That's on the ballot here. Mm-hmm. And so our goal is to not have to raise the millage rate next year if that homestead exemption passes, so that we can absorb the additional deduction. And for those reasons, that's why I would rather leave the millage rate where it is right now.
Yeah.
And isn't that expected to be $750,000?
Yes. Up to.
That's up to that, so it's not going to be the $6 million hit.
Okay, folks, the City Commission of the City of Winter Park is going to adopt an operating millage of 4.0923, which represents a property tax levy that is 6.42% higher than the rollback rate of 3.8456 mils due to increases in assessed values. Cindy, would you please read the roll on the millage ordinance?
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
No.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Now on the budget ordinance.
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. Okay.
That is it,
folks. Any further comments or questions while we have you all here? No. Peter, thank you for the hard work. Staff, thank you for all the work. You. Folks, we are adjourned.
Yeah, the budget's a sound document.
Peter.
Yes. First. Chris.